Next up, we have Christy Crespin and Nellie Emerson to for our next thing. So while I'm introducing that, let's go ahead and if you two could go ahead and raise your hands, then we will get you unmuted so that you can actually talk to us about what you're going to talk to us about, and that you're not just sitting there talking to yourselves about it, because that would just be boring for everybody. So, and once I get unmuted, Nellie and Christy are going to be speaking to us about People of Vision, which, for anybody that isn't aware, is the ACB book about the ACB history. We are lucky enough to have several CCB members in that, so they're going to be talking about us about People of Vision and those CCB members who have helped to shape the blindness movement. So, People of Vision with a California-centric viewpoint is how I would probably do that. So, do we have Nellie and Christy raising their hands? Perfect.
Done talking, so we
No,
both
I was going to say, just to help Andrea, if you guys hand, I'm going to say if your name is not Nellie Emerson or Christy Crespin, don't raise your hand. But she found you guys. Good. So, welcome, Nellie. Welcome, Christy. And I guess we have about 30 minutes here. So, I will at this point put myself on mute, and folks have had enough of hearing from me now, I think, so I'll shut up and let you guys take it.
Thank you very much. Nellie and I are very excited about being able to share with you this evening. We're nervous, and this is our twilight going toward bedtime. So that's what you all get for keeping us up. The book, People of Vision, A History of the American Council of the Blind, was written by James A. and Marjorie L. McGivern, copyright 2003 by ACB, by the American Council of the Blind. And this book tells of the 40-year history of ACB, but it actually tells about 66 years of CCB. And so there, Marjorie and James, Jim, interviewed basically about 60 people, and the only people they were not able to interview were Kenneth Jernigan and Russell Kletzing. Those were the two people that did not get interviewed. So, Kathy McGivern worked with Durward K. McDaniel, and she was a reporter, and so she was very much instrumental in helping this book get into writing. And of course, we have Newell Perry, Chris Gray, Kathy Skivers, George Fogarty, Alan Jenkins, Robert Acosta, Robert Campbell, Marie Hatanaka, John DeFrancesco, Charles Smalley, or Chuck as he was known by, Al Gill, Donald Wilkinson, who I don't recognize that name. It's the only one so far I don't recognize. Dan Smith, Don Queen, Leslie McCracken. You guys know who Leslie McCracken is? Her last name is Tom. Joanne Pomerantz, Jacobus Tenbrook, Perry Sundquist, A. Lamar Archibald, Juliet Bent, later Juliet Bent Esterly. Alvin Meyer, I don't know him. John and Audrey Hebner, I know Audrey. And a fun fact that we'll be getting to is that all members of ACB and ABC were expelled in 1959 from the NFB. And the last person I want to mention that I saw, doesn't mean that it's exhaustive, but that's what I could find, is Artis Basin. So I will turn it over to Nellie.
Okay, so we go way back to an individual who was unique in many ways, and that was Noel Perry. And Noel Perry was born in 1873 and died in 1961. He became totally blind at age 8 with an infection that resulted from exposure to poison oak. He was at CSB, and he attended the University of California. And he went on to attend the University of Zurich, and he obtained a doctorate degree. And he attained a doctorate in mathematics from Munich. And he taught in New York and at California School for the Blind. And in 1912, he became the director of CSB. He promoted change in attitudes and policies and general improvement in the way of life for blind people. He expanded an organization of the self-supporting blind. And then he traveled around California to assist the formation of county clubs of the adult blind. Helen Keller and Noel Perry were extremely hardworking and representative of blind people. Noel Perry was an example of a person who became adventitiously blind, and Helen Keller was somebody who was congenitally blind as well as deaf. And they worked in promoting opportunities and education and for people to be treated with dignity. So another area that Noel Perry was active in, he was involved in the establishing of pensions for the blind as far back as 1898 in New York and Illinois. That became a reality in 1903. In 1913 in Minnesota. By 1934, 24 states had pensions for the blind. Okay, Dr. Richard S. French and Dr. Perry taught at the University of California. And Dr. French had written a book that put forth new concepts in education of the blind. And he espoused increased participation of blind people in society in general.
So, by coincidence, there were two state events in 1934 that would have special significance for a national event a half dozen years later. The first was the formation, as Judy alluded to, of the California Council for the Blind, which then became Of the Blind, CCB, in Fresno on October 6, 1934, with 29 persons present, 16 of whom were blind and 13 of whom were sighted. Kathleen Michael, chief of the state division for the blind in the Department of Social Welfare, had planned to organize workers for the blind. For more than 10 years, Newell Perry, director of the California School for the Blind, had been working on plans to organize the blind themselves. The plans for the California Council seemed to respond to both purposes. However, one of, quotes, Perry's boys, which they were called, his little cronies, Jacobus Tenbrook, then a 23-year-old graduate student at the University of California, Berkeley, engineered a bylaw modification at the organizational meeting, giving blind members a permanent majority of seats on the board. This majority elected Dr. Perry as its first president, a post which he held until his retirement from the position in 1953. Perry Sundquist was elected second vice president, and Jacobus Tenbrook was elected to the executive committee. The second significant event was the formation independently of the Pennsylvania Federation of the Blind by Gayle, and it's G-A-Y-L-E, Burlingame, and a colleague that he met while training his guide dog, German Shepherd. In 1933, he met David Treatman, and they formed this organization together. The story of the organizing of blind Americans on the national level is inseparable from the life and career of Jacobus Tenbrook. He was born in Alberta, Canada in 1911, son of a Dutch father and a California mother, who met for the first time on the day of their arranged marriage. The couple took up homesteading in the rugged prairies of Alberta, where Jacobus lived until age 7, when he was blinded in a bow and arrow accident. The Tenbrooks moved to California and enrolled Jacobus Tenbrook in the School for the Blind, where he came under the tutelage of Dr. Newell Perry. Inspired by this remarkable man, Tenbrook went on to the University of California, where he graduated with honors. Law school came next with help from Perry, Newell Perry, and he ultimately earned 4 more degrees, 3 of them in law. In 1937, he married and subsequently raised 3 children. His wife, Hazel, who Ed and I had the pleasure of spending a lot of time with, and at her beautiful home in the Berkeley Hills, a sighted woman, was of invaluable help to him throughout his career. Although a writer, scholar, and specialist in social welfare, Tenbrook also focused his attention on continuing his mentor's efforts to improve the lot of all blind people through legislation and organization. As a lawyer and a professor of public speaking at the University of California, Berkeley, he continued to develop his talent. His addresses to NFB national conventions over the years were scholarly and often mesmerizing, and they undoubtedly constitute an important part of his legacy. Jacobus Tenbrook published 3 books and numerous articles on the Constitution, law, and the 14th Amendment. On the occasion of his death in 1968, a eulogy by George Card, who for 10 years was first vice president and right-hand man, included the remark that he was probably the most complex individual I have ever known. He was so idolized and trusted that conventions were happy to accede to his every wish. It is obvious why there was considerable interest in organizing nationally at this time. Many things had changed in society at large. The nation had endured an extremely difficult economic depression. The initial promises of President Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal had been slow to benefit many blind people, and early experiences with the Social Security Administration had sometimes been unusually frustrating. It was this set of circumstances that led Floyd Mattson to claim that in 1940, the condition of blind people in America was a barren landscape of impoverishment and frustration and an inner state of desolation and despair. The nation also happened to be on the brink of the Second World War in 1940 when Tenbrook arrived at the Wilkes-Barre meeting. And he had recently moved from Harvard to Chicago to start his first academic appointment at the University of Chicago Law School. In his inaugural address as president of the newly formed NFB in November, he launched an all-out attack on the Social Security Board, which he accused of profound ignorance of the problems of blind people, combining with incredible authoritarian arrogance. He was convinced that only an aggressive, militant national organization of the blind could diminish the board's arrogance, even if we cannot reduce its ignorance. And so he was very much pushing for reform, and a small group present, 16 people from 7 states, California, Illinois, Minnesota, Missouri, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin, must have wondered where this unusually eloquent orator had come from and what his future might hold. So he, at this first meeting, raised two resolutions, two bold resolutions. The first calling outright for a national pension for the blind, and the second calling on Congress to prevent the Social Security Board from further hindering the laudable goals of the Social Security Act. Nellie? Oh, no, it's me. Sorry. Okay. For going on so long.
Okay.
In September 10th of 1949, there was an issue in the Nation that carried a reporter's article that talked about the politics in California, describing the revolt of the blind. This article identified the leaders of this revolt as two remarkable Californians, Dr. Newell Perry and Jacobus Tenbrook, and told how the former had led the drive in 1928 to have California adopt a constitutional amendment making it possible for the state to develop a welfare program for the blind on a broader promise than the relief of poverty. And they were very involved in that. In October 10th of 1949, Durward McDaniel wrote an article wrote once more to Tenbrook, admitting his law practice, preparation was swamped, and he had been meaning to ask Tenbrook if he could send a brief message to the Oklahoma convention that following week. I want our membership to become more conscious of our affiliation with the National Federation, and other things that were going on, and legislation, a legislation bulletin dated November 1st, 1949, went out from the president's office reporting that a tremendous victory was gained for the blind over the Social Security Administration, which when the House voted overwhelmingly to retain Title 10 as a separate law dealing exclusively with aid to the blind. It can now be defended and improved on its own merit. It was sent to the Senate and passed. Dr. Tenbrook later looked back on this and accurately summed up the first decade of NFB's existence as basically a preparatory for the later achievements. The 1940s were a time of building from a scattering of seven state affiliates at our first convention to more than four times its number in 1950. In the decade of the 40s, we proved our organizational capacity, established our representative character, and initiated legislative programs on the state and national levels. Nellie?
And then we move on to 1953. The presidential bulletin in 1953 recognized Dr. Perry's retirement and also his 80th birthday. There was a committee of the AAWB.
American Association of Workers for the Blind.
Right. Mm-hmm. And they established a committee so that they could have relationships with agencies and entities that were involved in blindness services. Jacobus Tenbrook was invited to attend, and the role of the NFB was significantly expanded at that time. And that's where they had more power in their role as agency critics. Then there was A. Lamar Archibald. He was in 1888. He became blind due to a dynamite explosion, and that he lived with his family in Utah. So after that happened, his family moved to California, where he was taught by Dr. Noel Perry. He went on to really achieve a wonderful status as a very capable student. He graduated summa cum laude, and he And he was also in Phi Beta Kappa.
Now, this is Gabe. I'm going to jump in here real quick. We are actually probably down to about 5 to 10 minutes here.
Well, we are just going to have to leave off half of our research, but I understand the time constraints. So I will complete my part, and then Christy can wrap up hers. And we will have to have part two at another time.
We'll definitely have that. If not during the convention, we'll definitely have a time that you guys can share what you got left there.
Oh, yeah, we worked hard on this. Okay.
I can tell.
Okay. In 1944, he worked for the U.S. Army. He worked as a civilian education and rehabilitation agent, where he developed a program for blinded soldiers. And he worked in the Menlo Park Military Hospital.
Okay, you ready for me?
Yep.
Okay, so in 1956, there was a turning point, and things started to get not so great for Tinbrook. As the years passed, more and more strife was happening. Things were happening where some money was spent for things, and questions were happening with the American Brotherhood. ABB, American. Anyway, and then by 1961, a lot of people were being kicked out of ACB, as well as were leaving and resigning. And there were several people who in Kansas City went across the street and formed the ACB, of who one major player was Kathy Skivers. And Kathy served many offices in the ACB and was our first CCB woman president. There just is so much to read in this about the strife and the sadness of things that went on. And, you know, we can kind of think about how things are for us in ACB today and in CCB, and we might be able to draw a few parallels. At one point, NFB was running out of money. And so decisions were made that were very one-sided. And I will just say that I hope that ACB and CCB, that people read this book again and learn from our history and follow us in 78 when we broke away from NFB.
We didn't quite break away willingly.
We were kicked out of and sued. And Bob Acosta fought a brave, brilliant fight. And for a while, there were three organizations of the blind. There was the California Council of the Blind, the ACBC, and the
Golden State Federation
of the Blind. Mm-hmm. And we all joined together, and we joined ACB in 1986, and we haven't looked back. So the presidents of the American Council of the Blind, Ned E. Freeman, 1961 to 1966. Reese H. Robron, 1966 to 1972. Floyd Qualls, 1972 to 1978. Oral M. Miller, 1978 to 1981. Grant Mack, 1981 to 1987. Otis H. Stevens, 1987 to 1989. Leroy Saunders, 1989 to 1995. Paul Edwards, 1995 to 2001. Christopher Gray, 2001 to 2007. Mitch Pomerantz, 2007 to 2013. Kim Charlson, 2013 to 2019. Dan Spoon, 2019. And I'm sorry, I did not write when, I think it was 2021, 22. Deb Cook Lewis, Deb Cook Lewis, 2023. So there you have our.
No, actually.
Pardon?
I was wrong. It was Dan was till 2023, I think. And then Deb just took over last year.
Yeah, that's right. I just couldn't remember. So there you have our presentation, and we appreciate sharing, and maybe we'll be able to go on a Zoom call and
give you the rest
give you the rest of the story,
because there's a lot to be shared.
All right, well,
and in the meantime, read your book.
Yep, People of Vision. Thank you.
All right, so we can take me just a couple of minutes if Peter will just stay up here. We can take a couple of minutes for just one or two questions.
Yeah.
So if there's anyone that has any questions about what Nellie and Christy talked about here, go ahead and press the buttons to raise your hands. Andrea, do we have any hands up?
1 second, please. Okay, we have two hands.
Okay, two hands, so we'll take two questions.
We have a phone number. Okay. 760.
Hello, Linda.
Hey. So I was just kind of curious if you know what happened. So you said in 1928, that's when the proposal was made to start the Aid to the Blind. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, so, and then in 1949, it was enacted?
It was enacted as a nation, because by that time, there were like 24 states, but it eventually got enacted nationwide, and it was removed by the passage of the supplemental security income.
Right. Yeah, so I was just kind of wondering what happened. So the Depression started in October of 1929. What happened throughout all those years? How did blind people live, or was there any income dispersed
at
that time?
No, there was nothing.
Yeah. No, because they were the responsibility of their families, or placed in asylums.
In institutions, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I wanted to bring that up because
in the beginning they give a whole big timeline of the history of the blind. So it's really interesting. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I just bring that up because it's so important to know our history, because from where we have been, there we might go again. History repeats itself. And so I just wanted to bring that up, that, you know, times were really hard and could be hard again. You know, it's happened throughout history. So thanks for taking my question.
Thank you, Linda.
Thanks, Linda. Yeah, as the thing is, those who don't understand history are doomed to repeat it, right?
That's right.
Christy Nelly, thank you for that that interesting summary and look into people of vision.